Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game National Studios. We are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee, live from First Horizon Park on a throwback Thursday where the Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers, the AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves, who I'm just going to put this out there, TD, stink, just so we get that out of the way at the beginning here.
Yeah, they are not good. Not good at all. And in the meantime, my Mets are up 4-0 over the Dodgers in L.A. I can't wait to see Jimmy Wyatt. Won last night it was 6-5 or 6-1, if I'm not mistaken. Good things.
So, bad things for the Braves, good things there for the Mets. So, I want to start, TD, even though we spent the entire break, you and I, talking about NBA players from the 90s, which is something I could talk about for 10 hours probably,
Was Jordan your favorite?
I loved Jordan back in the day.
Okay, he wasn't my favorite.
Who was your favorite?
So we're going to go 90s. It was a tie between Dominique Wilkins and Patrick Ewing.
Dominique Wilkins was a bad boy.
Neek used to, I'm a two-foot jumper because of Neek.
See, you have to remember, because I was born in 89, you know, the first three Jordan titles I don't really remember, but I remember the last three. And Space Jam came out, I think, in 95. Mm-hmm. So for, like, the generation of people like me, Space Jam, you know, that's Bugs Bunny, Michael Jordan teaming up. I think that had an effect on a lot of us.
Yeah. No, I could reason with that. I was a Knicks fan when I was younger. So, Bernard King was my favorite player. Then Patrick Ewing. And then, you know, eventually it got to Carmelo Anthony. And when they traded Melo, I said, I'm done with him.
Were you pro Kobe or anti Kobe?
Initially, anti-Kobe. It's weird. Like, after he got into that trouble, I started to like him. Not because he got into the trouble, but I just really appreciated his game. And I was like, man, everybody's hating on this dude. I like him, man.
I was always anti-Kobe until, like, after Shaq left.
Oh, yeah.
So I was – because I was Jordan, and then Kobe and Shaq, and I was rooting for Portland when they lost in seven games with Scottie Pippen. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe because Scottie was on that Portland team and I was a Jordan guy and, you know, I didn't know Scottie and Jordan hated each other. But and then the Sacramento series with which ended up being cooked in hindsight was a freaking war between the two.
The Denver series. Denver was – I think they were up 2-0 and then there was a crazy foul called and then it turned to things.
Now, Jeffrey Simmons, OTA, is not there for the Titans. TD – usually when a guy is not there, it's because there's some sort of contract dispute. He's not happy. There's usually something attached to it. It doesn't seem like that is the case with Simmons. Why is Simmons not there?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's someone who doesn't do the voluntary things. He just hasn't done it since he's been here. I don't think it's a testament to his work ethic or anything like that. He's getting the work in. I thought it was interesting because Devondre Sweat had told me that he was going to work with him and his brother Dylan Bradley during the offseason, but Sweat said he didn't work out with Jeff, so I don't know what happened there. But I think normally this is something I would say, hey, you know, no big deal. It is a bit of an issue in this setting that they're in now because the team was 3-14. Jeff didn't have a Pro Bowl-level season, and – he is the face of the franchise until Cameron Ward takes that over. So it is good for him to be there at the voluntary stuff. Also because of everything that's going on, the team building, right? The focus on the – and we talked about this, right? The focus on the cutting away the sins, right? Self-inflicted negatives. Focusing on cutting away the MEs, the mental errors. There are a lot of times where – because you look at this Titans team, the defense – they didn't give up a lot of yards, but they gave up a lot of points, right? And there were times where, and you look at the offense, they're right up there with turnovers and negative field, et cetera, et cetera. So if you look, there were a lot of times where the defense came in and they did what Jeffrey Simmons said they set out to do, is be the fire guy. Like, they got to put out the fire. They put the fire out for 2.7 downs, but they got the stop on third down, and he'll get a bad penalty afterward. And give them the first down, whole new set, now they could score. And that 3 points goes to 7 points. Those are the types of things, the very things that they're looking to eliminate. And with that being the focus, he being a repeat offender, that he needs to be there for, from that perspective to me.
I'm glad you brought up the 3 and 14 angle of this, because it does kind of feel like Simmons is approaching this with the idea of, well, I don't need to be there. And it's like, maybe you don't need to be there, but
optically,
your team needs you to be there.
Yeah.
And that bothers me as well, because I'm like, sometimes I kind of feel like Jeff wants his cake and eats, and he wants to eat it too. He wants to get paid. He wants to be viewed as the leader. He wants to be a team spokesperson. But with that comes a certain level of responsibility. And by him not being there, it feels to me like he's not meeting it.
Yeah.
And then I wonder, too, the Callahan front of this. Like, I believe Brian Callahan and Simmons have a good working relationship. I don't know why I believe that, but I believe that. At the same time, for Callahan to have to get up there and say on one hand, hey, we're going to eliminate the mistakes this year, and this is my path forward on how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Simmons to say, essentially with his actions, well, that's all good, but I'm going to go do my own thing. And then Callahan has to defend Simmons not being there. It puts Callahan in a tough spot. It's like, is this really transformational? You know, if Jeffrey Simmons isn't going to buy into it. And I just think that, again, all Jeffrey Simmons had to do was come last week to OTAs. That's it. Like, all he's got to do is know the day the media is going to be there, go out there that day, get out on the field for 20 minutes, and call it a day.
Yeah. But here's the good thing about it. 2 weeks from now, we're not even going to be talking about this. That's the good thing about it. And there is time for him to jump into the program and get acclimated and get settled in and get on the same page. Is it the best path? No, not at all. Right? Like, we're going from here to here, and he's going this way like this rather than going. But I think he could get there. It's just going to be a little bit longer, right?
If I were to sit down with Jeffrey Simmons and I were to say, okay, give me the why of why you're not there. Like, why did you feel like you didn't need to be out there? Even from an optic standpoint, like, what's the why here? What do you think his answer would be?
I think he trusts in his own work. And like I said, like, his brother is a pretty good trainer. And the Titans, they trust him to do his own work. You heard Brian Callahan said, if there's anybody I don't have to worry about being ready, it's Jeffrey Simmons. But I think he's missing the bigger picture point in that it's not about whether or not you're going to be ready as much as it's about you setting the tone in this situation that needs a huge tone. So why do you think everybody, because I know you got an issue with Cam Ward, right, Cameron Ward and the confidence and everybody's saying – why do you think everybody is doing that? Because this organization is starving for a leader.
It's almost like we need this, so tell ourselves that.
But
this is
speaking
what we're
of that confidence, though, because I heard, was it Monday, you were saying how, you know.
You could be optimistic.
How could he be? But listen to me. I'm going to give it to you. Even though he hasn't thrown a pass in the NFL game, as an athlete, right, you build confidence off of your preparation. Why do you think? A lot of times, you know, on Fridays, it's like if they had a good week of practice, on Fridays, like, everybody's upbeat, everybody's happy because they're like, yo, like, I'm confident because we put the work in to get the result. Now, did they get the result last year? Maybe 3 times, that was it. But typically, as an athlete, the effort, the participation, the preparation, everything that you put in, that builds the confidence. Actually, more than actually going on the field and doing it. And once you go on the field and do it, that just reinforces the confidence. That's how it works.
So I think Marcus had a line like that when he was the quarterback, which was, like, he doesn't get nervous because you only get nervous when you're not prepared or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Marcus is a perfect example of a dude that just never really had that confidence.
I think he had the confidence. It was just never the – like, there's other parts – that got to come with that confidence, and there were just things that he didn't have. Like, Marcus was a dog, but he wasn't a killer.
So optimistic that Cam can go out there and do things early on that gives everybody confidence in him and that gives him confidence in himself. And I'm talking about doing things on the field, you know, really like those joint practices and maybe a preseason game when he gets in, like the true competition.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, for me, though, it's just all kind of like – telling yourself, oh, this can happen, which I think is more optimism than it is confidence.
No, I'll tell you it's confidence.
Like Barry Trotz told me one time, because I asked him before they played McDavid, and I was like, what's it like when you've got that guy on your team? Because he coached Ovechkin in Washington. And he was like, there is a feeling when you've got that guy on your team that every single person in the building can have a bad day and he will save you. And I'm not saying that Cam Ward can't be that guy. I am saying, though, I don't think the Titans can have that Ovechkin-McDavid feeling about him yet.
Who says they do?
Well, that's confidence.
That's, see, and there's levels to it. Ovechkin is a supreme elite athlete. That's different, right? And when I say supreme elite athlete, like he's already established, you know what, that's a different level of confidence.
He's that dude, and everyone knows it.
What's going on now, that they believe that Cameron is that dude, right? But then they also see the preparation and everything that he's putting in. And I know the 5 a.m. things is not big to you, but it is big to a lot of people in that organization.
It's big to me that he's the one not talking about it.
It's huge that he's not. It's
and
huge.
It's everybody
but,
else
but
that's talking about it and
thing.
Not him.
Here's the thing. So, like, I got a Cam story coming out. And, you know, I talked to different people in his family. That's them. That's just who they are. That's who they are. Like, they're people. They're not going to boast or brag about anything. They're not going to do any of that. They're just going to, like, everything is just status quo and it's calm. And that's why this dude is the way he is, man. It's pretty fascinating just watching his interaction with the other, like the veterans and stuff. Because I was supposed to talk to him last week, you know, and we were about to talk. Sebastian Joseph Day came up and he started trash talking and Cam trash talking him back. And we had to push it to the next week because they were, you know what I mean? Like, but it's just all like calm, like not excited type. It's just, he's a very even keeled dude. I think that's the best way to put it.
TD is with us. Speaking of Cam Ward, what he saw on the football field out of Cam Ward for the second open OTA ahead of the mandatory minicamp. We'll do that next. We are live from First Horizon Park, Sounds and Stripers tonight, 6:35, Stillman & Company, 102.5 The Game.
Is getting up at 5 a.m. the norm for you, or getting to work at 5 a.m. the norm for you, or is that just something that you're doing this summer?
It's just my process. It's just how I've always been in college, even to now. And it's really just, you know, how I get everything in, what I need to get in, whether it's film, treatment-wise, just, you know, I got to get everything in to start my day, to end my day, and, you know, by whatever time, you know, you got to get it, you got to get it done.
Does coach ever tell you, go home and go back to sleep? I need you energized?
Well, I'm always energized. I'm playing football, so, you know, I'm doing what I love. Not a lot of people, you know, can do that in this world, so, you know, I'm one of the 1% who's blessed to do it, so, you know, I'm always going to have energy when I'm on the field.
Cam Ward waking up 5 a.m. every morning, or I guess getting to work at 5 a.m., TD.
Yeah, getting to work at 5 a.m., so 3:30 wake up probably.
You think it's 3:30?
I don't know. I know, like, there was a trip when I went to East Baptist Christian College, University, whatever it is, and they woke up at 3:30 a.m. to leave at 5. So I just guessed 3:30.
Chris Sanders and I were talking about this yesterday. My guess is Cam's staying at one of the hotels right by the facility, and he probably wakes up at 4:45, rolls out of bed, or 4:55, rolls out of bed, goes right to the facility, which I got no problem with. I mean, they got all the food there. They got all the go get your lift in, go get your shower on, get to the meetings.
That is what he told me when I talked to him earlier this week. He was like, man, I'm not going to pay for anything. I've got the food right here. I'll just bring that from, because, you know, you could take the to-go boxes. And you know, you could bring the Gatorades or Powerades, whatever you drink, and it's all provided for you.
That being said, how do you look on the football field this week at OTAs?
I will say this, because I was scheduled to speak to him after practice, right? And so, like, the first he started out the 7-on-7 period, and I was like, dang, I need this guy to turn it around. Because I wanted him to be, like, you know, upbeat afterward, you know. He had a rough start. He was on – he and I keep – I don't remember if it was Van Jefferson or Io Manor. I think it was Jefferson. They tried to connect on the curl route. Jefferson ran the curl. The receiver ran the curl. Cam threw it outside of him. So I think he thought it was a different route. And I remember the receiver running back, and he's like, my bad. So I know that, well, I'm pretty sure that was on Cam. He tends to take the blame for everything, but I'm pretty sure that one was on him. Then he had another one actually on a similar route to Colton Dowell. And he tried to get it in there, and the safety came down, and Dow and the safety collided, and it was incomplete. But then he started to get a little hot. And he and Restrepo connected a couple times for, I know fans want to know about that. there was one, like, he shot it right into a spot, and it was just before Restrepo got in the window, but he got in the window and he snapped it. And remember, so this was third down period they were working on. So there's new things that they're going over offensively, but then also you're seeing different things defensively. Like Denard Wilson started to send the blitz a few more times and things like that. So he continued to throw in between the hashes. There were a couple throws where I'm like, man, that dude is living dangerously. And that is the Cam Ward experience. You're going to have those. I think he had a solid day. Nothing like overly spectacular, but, you know, there were some good shots. But I want to say this. Will Levis had a nice shot to who was it?
DK?
No. It might have been DK or it might have been Oliver. I have to go back to my notes. But it was a nice shot. I think it was Bryce Oliver, actually. And he went up and he snatched the ball over one of the lower tier corners. Really nice ball on a fade. So I want to get the Levis shout out in there too, because Levis is, he's doing what he needs to do to stay the course. And we know it's not a true competition, but you know, it'll be interesting seeing how he continues to do.
What do you think the Titans' plan for Levis is?
Honestly, I think right now their plan is to just showcase him as much as possible. And that's not to trade him necessarily, just to, hey, look, this dude could play, right? And then eventually maybe they do trade him, but I don't think he's a bad fallback option as your backup quarterback, right? And the thing is, I just wonder how he would play in this situation, right? Like, I wonder if he's going to come, if he would come in and press too much, or I wonder if he'll come in and just execute the offense, because one of the things that he said, like, there's not really much, like, as much pressure on him, you know, so it's, we'll see.
I just, when it comes to Levis, it's like, if they didn't think that Levis could be on the team, then he would already be gone. Like, if they thought that, you know, Levis was going to be a distraction or was going to cry about not them drafting Cam, mm-hmm. then Levis would have already been gone. If they wanted to trade him, like, if they were like, hey, we want to just get something for him and move on, he'd already be gone, because they would have made that move prior to free agency opening up. Mm-hmm. So they didn't do that. In fact, they were adamant that they were not interested in dealing Will Levis. I mean, Jim Wyatt had a story up on the team's website of Chad Brinker saying, we haven't entertained the idea of getting rid of Levis. They said after the draft, we didn't talk to anybody about getting rid of Levis. But then I'm trying to figure out, okay, so are you gassing him up now, hoping that he can get you a pick? Because I don't think after the season he had, even if he lights it up in the preseason against second and third teamers, I don't think teams in the NFL are going to offer much in exchange for Will Levis. I mean, Joe Milton had as good of a game as you could have, you know, in that kind of showcasing for something, and he only went for a fifth and brought a seventh back. So I'm like, okay, there's not much upside in a Levis trade, even if he does play well. So is the plan going to be three quarterbacks, or is the plan going to be, you know, to gas up Levis and trade him for whatever they can get, you know, or is there just not a plan and, hey, we'll coach him every day and go from there?
I think you could afford, like, who's going to claim Brandon Allen? Who's going to claim Tim Boyle, right?
Like, well, nobody's claiming Tim Boyle. I mean,
right,
he's, yeah.
But see, you could put those guys on the practice squad is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? You could always do that. And then if that doesn't work out, you always got Old Faithful. You know what I mean? You go ahead and give Trevor Siemian a call, and he'll come. He's probably in Brentwood or Franklin somewhere anyway, you know what I mean? And he'll come running in, and you have instantly an emergency backup quarterback if you need it.
So do you think you could see the Titans with Will Levis on the team for the next 2 years? Because in a perfect world, they don't want him to play.
Right.
So for 2 years, Levis is around, Levis is improving, Levis is out there performing in the preseason or something, and the Titans are cool with 2 years of that, and then he goes on his way? Or do you think at some point the Titans would look to move him?
Good question. I don't know. I think they'll look to move him eventually this upcoming offseason. I think they could look to move him. But, again, it's going to depend on, okay, how does Cameron Ward look? And then also, what are you doing at backup? I think to have Levis as your backup the next 2 years is not a bad situation.
Well, the Texans have gone the route with Davis Mills if he's the backup. Mm-hmm. And then they signed Davis Mills to an extension to stay as the backup. And so in theory, the Titans could do that. But Levis
ain't doing that.
Levis just doesn't profile as a backup to me. No. Not because I don't think that he has the attitude to do it. I think he does have the right attitude. I think if Levis knew, like, hey, I'm a backup and I signed for this, kind of like Zach Wilson signed to be a backup in Miami, and I think he could do it. But when I think of a backup quarterback, I think of a guy that comes in and really doesn't put the ball in harm's way. And when I think of Levis, I think of a guy who comes in and immediately puts the ball in harm's way.
And that's the thing I'm curious about. Like, will he press, right? Because, like, was his previous pressing because he felt the weight of, hey, look, here are the keys, drive the car, don't crash it? Being as though that car is taken away now, I wonder if he'll still play the same. You know what I mean? And that's sometimes, like, you go through a humiliating experience and you come out on the other side of that a better person, right? And in this case, maybe he comes out a better quarterback after going through, hey, look, man, like, they snatched the rug from under me. I didn't help secure it, but they snatched it from under me. I know some things I got to work on. Let me change it up, boom, boom, which he did, working with Jordan Palmer. And maybe he comes back a different guy. I don't know.
I would tell you this. When I sat down with Levis at the Super Bowl, not this past year, but the year before that, and, I mean, I sat down with him for like 15 minutes, and I'm telling you, and I'm sure you've had similar experiences, but, like, I could feel how tight he was wound. Like, I could feel it. Like, I almost wanted to be like, hey, man.
It's too, like, loud. It's
okay. Yeah, like, you know, we were in Las Vegas, and I wanted to be like, you know, those gummies are legal here. Like, you might want to take a couple. I remember one time he ran out on the practice field. This might have been with his rookie year or whatever, and he, like, downed 2 5-hour energies and threw them in the trash. And I saw that, and then after sitting down with him and seeing how wound tight he was, I really wanted to be like, hey, dude, like, you need to chill out a little bit. Yeah. You know, there was a game his rookie year at Tampa Bay where they got down 2 scores, and he threw a YOLO ball, and it didn't get intercepted. But as soon as he threw that, Tim Kelly immediately starts calling bubble screens. Mm-hmm. And I realized it watching the film back that they did that because Tim Kelly's like, if we don't, this kid is going to throw the game to the other team if we don't take the decision to throw it down the field away from
him. Wasn't
that
one dropped by the safety or something like that?
I think so. I mean, it was like an arm punt.
Yeah.
And they ended up not intercepting it. And the next play was like an 18-yard bubble screen to Kyle Phillips because it was like, okay, we're taking this. Because if you remember the week before at Pittsburgh, Levis on that drive, he threw like 6 YOLO balls being like, well, I got to get it back here.
One of them was specifically dictated to him to throw it, though. Like, he had an alert. They had an alert put in where if Burks was one-on-one, didn't matter who the corner was.
That was the fourth down play, right?
Yeah. Because Phillips came open underneath. He and Chig ran. And it's interesting because they have that same, actually come to think of it, they have the same pattern, combo in this offense as they did, as Chig and Kyle Phillips did in that one.
So, well, you know what Floyd used to tell me? He said, everybody can have different schemes, but there's only 4 directions you can run in. There's forward, to the left, to the right, and backwards.
Yeah.
And
but
so,
it was like the way that it was set up, like the layered routes and stuff. It was interesting.
We'll hit your phones for TD at the end of the hour, 615-737-1025. Now, we've talked about Simmons, Ward, and Levis. Let's talk about everybody else, how they've looked so far out there at OTAs. We'll do that with TD next. Stillman & Company, 1025 The Game.
When you have somebody with his kind of confidence coming in, is it tough to tell when something's clicking for him since the confidence was already baseline, or can you kind of see a difference in
him? No, you can see. He asks really good questions. He understands when he makes a mistake, which they all make plenty, and we have the conversations about it. He's got a humility about him, so he knows when it's time to step back and try to get better and see where he can do things differently. And then there's the moment when the moment comes when he's like, I'm going to make this throw, and he makes it. So there's a balance, but he understands that when it's time to learn and when to take a step back from the confidence part of it and where can he improve, and that part's been good to see.
There you go. That was Brian Callahan talking about Cam Ward. But TD, I want to know about some of the guys other than Cam Ward. You know, kind of give me a who has shown out so far at Titans OTAs. There's only been two that have been open. Next week will be the mandatory minicamp out there. We'll probably see a lot more. But who has impressed you so far, and who maybe could you say, I want to see a little bit more from?
Well, I'll say this, man. I love the urgency that Ridley practices with. And it's almost like he has a, I don't want to say like a new energy, but you could tell like he's charged up coming into this year. And I get it, right? You know, you're in year two after being in a place for the first time. So that's going to happen. But, I mean, if you talk about guys, Cody Barton, just he and Xavier Woods, like those dudes are like traffic cops, man. Like they talk and they're directing stuff. And it's been impressive seeing that. I know Denard Wilson, he wants, as he calls it, obnoxious communication, and you're getting that from two guys that are brand new to the team.
Mm-hmm.
Femi Oladejo had a good couple. Now, take it for what it's worth. Obviously, no pads on, but he had a – first, he talked some trash to Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon, who was one of the guys that a lot of people think has a good shot at making the roster, right? He was talking trash to him, and then he bucked at him and made him false start. And then later in practice, he came around off of the edge, and he flushed the quarterback out. It would have been a sack.
Mm-hmm.
He had that. And then even against J.C. Latham, he got a really good – he used like a jump cross chop, and he was able to get around Latham. But this is an example of where I think that lost weight is helping Latham, because he did get around him, but Latham was able to reset and drop back a little bit further and make the path to Cam Ward in this case – a little bit longer, and,
mm-hmm.
and Cam just kind of stepped up and flushed out of the pocket and threw across his body to Shimure Dike for a first down in that third down period. So those four guys jump out to me just as, you know, for different reasons. I'm trying to think of who else. None of the tight ends have really stood out. You know, Gunnar Helm is a guy I was really looking forward to seeing, but like I've somewhat forgotten about looking for him because mm-hmm. it just hasn't really happened. But I know at some point he's going to, you know, do it. Ayo Manor, for sure. You know, it's not always making catches as much as it's the way he runs his routes. And it's funny because we were at Ridley's camp and we were talking, and I told him straight up, because he was like, man, I love watching this guy practice and learn a lot. I said, listen, I've never seen a receiver practice with more urgency than him. And I'm like, Ellick, like I've Steve Smith Sr., Alshon Jeffrey, Anquan Boldin, you know, a lot of names that I've seen. And there are more, Torrey Smith, you know, Nelson Aguilar. There's a lot of guys that I've seen. But watching the way he practices is a different sense of urgency.
I do want to go with Ridley for a second here for one specific reason. I think Ridley – to me, I'm fascinated by him. He seems like a really complex dude.
Yeah.
And, he made some plays last year. Like,
oh, yeah.
No doubt about it. He's got game. Like, he's good. I'm not questioning that. I'm not.
Yeah.
Like, Jacksonville probably makes the playoffs the year before if Ridley catches the ball that Trevor Lawrence basically laid in his hands in that Week 17 game against the Titans. And he dropped that one. Then in Atlanta, there was the mental health break that he took, and there was the gambling suspension that Calvin Ridley got, which mm-hmm. maybe kind of changed how I thought about him without. But then you brought up the urgency that he plays with, and I just hear the way he talks about it. Like, he sounds like a guy who genuinely wants to be a part of the solution in terms of turning the Titans
mm-hmm.
around.
You know, he told me, you know, in the 4-H's, I asked him about that, and he was like, yo, man, like, I really opened up, and some of us, we cried as we were, you know, so even from that perspective, you're seeing like a really sharp approach to it. I hope he has a big year, you know, just for his sake, and obviously that's good for business, you know what I mean, but I do hope he's able to put some things together.
What do you think about the rookie receivers? You brought up Ayo Manor.
Yeah.
What about DK? I keep seeing DK's name pop up a lot.
Yeah, well, there was – as you saw me scrolling through some of these things on Twitter, there was a video they posted today, maybe about 45 minutes ago, where DK in the corner of the end zone, Cameron Ward found him for a touchdown. Xavier Woods was trying to swing down on it but didn't get there in time. So I like DK a lot. I like the speed aspect of. No, I'm not gonna say I like him a lot. I like what I've seen from just the speed aspect. Mm-hmm. Those 5 a.m. meetings, I talked to him about that, and he's like, you know, I feel prepared, so I'm confident when I'm on the field and comfortable, and that's allowed me to play fast. Which a lot of times you see like those guys that are fast in college and at the combine, et cetera, when it gets to the NFL field, it slows down because there's so much they're thinking about, and that preparation is helping them in that case. So we'll see how he continues. For me, like, I don't know, like if I'm Nick Holtz, I'm dialing up at least 2 or 3 of those deep over routes to him per period, you know what I mean, because I just want to see him run and see him, you know, catch the ball at the opposite hash and take off. So you got those.
What do we think about the running game? I know there's really not a lot you can take away from the running game at this point, but the backs themselves, what do you think so far?
Tajay Spears looks faster to me. But, again, no pads on, so it's, you know, take it for what it's worth. Even Julius Chestnut, he had a run last week, you know, a little move to freeze up the defender, and then he did another inside-out type of move, and he got to the sideline and he took off. I think the running game is going to be solid. I mean, it was good last year. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? With Tony Pollard on the bum foot, it was still good. So I think they'll be fine. You have that two-headed monster. But I really want to see, you know, they bring in Khalil Mullins. I want to see how much of a hammer he could be. Like, people forget, like, this dude's 225 pounds. You know what I mean? Like, he's not little. He's a big back, you know. So it's going to be interesting seeing the third wheel, who takes that.
Do you think that with Mullins that he is – that they drafted him to be that short yardage thumper, or do you think they drafted him because he did play linebacker at Michigan to be a special teams player who can really pop somebody, you know, whether it's on kickoff coverage, punt coverage, something like that?
It's a combination. Here's the thing. I think he could probably settle into a little bit of a higher-end Hassan Haskins, who, mm-hmm. if you remember, like, he was that special teams dude for them. They would bring him in, you know, he's another big back, but they would bring him in and didn't always, you know, convert in the short yardage stuff. But I think that's kind of the vision they have for Mullen.
All right, let's hit your phones for TD as we always do. 615-737-1025. That's our phone number, 615-737-1025. Live from First Horizon Park tonight, the Sounds and the Gwinnett Stripers, the AAA affiliate of the Braves, 635, first pitch on a throwback Thursday at Stillman & Company, 1025 The Game. Stillman & Company live out of First Horizon Park. Sounds tonight, Gwinnett Stripers, 635, TD Power Hour, Teron Davenport with us from ESPN. By the way, before we get to the phones, I do want to mention TD will be having a very special Father's Day story that will be dropping at ESPN.com. Do we just want to leave it at that?
Yeah, we can leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. Be looking for that on Father's Day. Let's go to your phones, unless you have a thought.
To the phone.
Phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Blair is going to kick us off here. Blair, you're on with TD. Go ahead.
Hey, Teron. It's Blair Durham. How you doing, man?
Oh, my guy, man. How are you?
I'm well. So I've got an off-the-wall question. Of the current rookies on the roster, who would be the best fit for the Olympic flag football team?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good question. I would say, you know, that's a good question. I would say Shimmeray, DK. I'm going Restrepo because that short area quickness that he has, I would go with Restrepo. Who would you go with?
Probably DK.
Yeah, because of the speed, but, right? 4.3.
Yeah.
No, it's that's definitely that was my first pick, but yeah, I'll say Restrepo.
Well, there are a bunch of Titans fans that are happy that's your answer. I can guarantee you that.
Oh, yeah. I tell you that right now.
Restrepo is—he's definitely loved in
Thank
the
you,
city,
Blair.
Man. Appreciate you, Blair.
I do wonder this though. I saw somebody say they were like, "I actually cover flag football, and I am a big NFL fan." And I am telling you, the guys that play flag football right now would goose the guys that currently play in the NFL.
It's a different game.
Do you think that like when 2028 comes around, that it will be so obvious that, like, hey, this guy you've never heard of out in San Diego is just going to mop the floor with Tyreek Hill?
I wouldn't be surprised because it's like I said, it's a different game. Me personally, I'm not for NFL guys getting involved with that, man. Like, I'm old enough to remember Robert Edwards, the out of Georgia, the mm-hmm. New England Patriots running back, and he had a pretty promising rookie year. And then at the Pro Bowl, they had like a flag football type thing on the beach, and he tore his knee every which way possible, and no more. You know, so to me, nah.
My big thing with the flag football is I just don't think it's going to have the impact that the owners think it's going to have. Like, I think they think this is like Jordan and Magic and Barkley and Bird going to Barcelona, and I just don't think that's going to be the case.
Yeah, because it's just not the same game. And in even international basketball is not the same game, but it's a pretty good resemblance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the other thing, too, and again, I don't mean to be mean, but I also kind of think, like, Europeans just really don't care about the NFL. Like, I know that they sell out the tickets when they go there, mm-hmm. but it's like, they run polls, like people in London, like, do you actually care about the NFL? And they're like, no. They're like, the game's too boring. One texter says, TD, what do you make of the battle for the back end of the wide receiver position?
That's why I asked Callahan about that dedicated slot position, if that's something they're moving away from. Because if it is, then, you know, that's really going to make it even harder for your Mason Kinseys and Xavier Restrepo's. But I think the battle I like it. I mean, you got Bryce Oliver. I forgot about Colton Dow, and he had a pretty solid day earlier this week. So you got those guys. Prochet, he brings the return aspect. Obviously, Chimray DK. I mean, those guys make the roster. Mm-hmm. But I think DK and Iomana are on, like, two different levels as far as, like, where – they're ranked. I think Iomana is a legit threat to start, where I think he could be the starting X receiver for you. And then, look, man, you still got Treylon Burks, too. And I know that's a name that just brings out a lot of venom from Titans fans, but you still got him out there. If he can stay healthy, we'll see. But me personally, I throw all expectation and optimism out of the window with
sure.
him. He's just, okay, well, let's see how it works.
I almost wonder, too, like, how many of these guys are going to separate on special teams? You know, Colton Dow is an example. Mm-hmm. He was, I don't want to say an ace on special teams.
Bryce Oliver.
But he really, at the end of that rookie year before he tore his ACL at Houston, Colton Dow was becoming a guy that they could really rely on mm-hmm. on special teams. And we, I think, have been through it enough to know whether it's Craig Aukerman or Colt Anderson. Like, we know that bad special teams will absolutely ruin a game for you or a season for you. So I look at those guys as much as anything, like, okay, how are you going to make it or are you not going to make it? One texter says, TD, how are the Titans going to generate pass rush this season? They lose Harold Landry, they bring in Oladejo and Draymond Jones, but is that enough?
That is a good question. That was kind of the theme when I talked to Ben Bloom, the outside backers coach, and Tracy Rocker, the D-line coach, and it's really about the way they're looking at it. It's all about being more coordinated as a pass rush group. And so that was one of the things in my notes from practice earlier this week, is you see the groups working together a little bit more, and they're working on different things just as far as to make sure that rush is coordinated, whether it's twists, games, or even making sure that the outside backers aren't too deep when they, mm-hmm. they run the arch. And because if they get too deep, I actually explained it earlier, right? When J.C. Latham was able to recover and wash Oladejo down, Ward was able to step up and flush out of the pocket. You don't want that window to be created. So that's a part of a tiered pass rush. So you do have that they're working on. And it's also a matter of, like with Oladejo and some of the other outside guys, is making sure that they're able to rush with power, speed to power, speed off the edge, and have counters from these moves. So they want to have a counter to their main move to be able to get to the quarterback faster. That's essentially what it boils down to. Finishing the deal as opposed to, you know, how many missed sacks they had last year.
One texter says, TD, what's more important, Brownlee or Baker solidifying a starting role, or Cedric Gray and James Williams doing the same at inside backer?
Yeah, well, you don't want Baker to solidify a starting role, because that would mean that the Jarius Sneed isn't out there. You know what I mean? Brownlee right now, I think.
I figured he already solidified.
Yeah, that's it. That was a part of, you know, why they were able to part ways with Cheeto Awuzie. So Yeah, I would say probably Gray or Williams. I think they're going to continue to rotate those guys in. I will say, you know, just watching Cedric Gray this year, you could tell he's a lot more comfortable. Initially, man, like he was struggling. He couldn't play fast. Everything was just, you know, all a whirlwind. Rookie green dot, like that was a tough situation for him. So I want to see how he comes along. Don't discount Otis Reese, though. Right, and they got the rookie. I always struggle to pronounce his name. Benda, I think it's G-B-E-N-D-A. He's all right, and he's becoming like a real protege of Cody Barton. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what young player steps up. There's like three or four options.
So this past week in Louisville, baseball was in town, and I go way back with the athletic director there, and we were talking about Brownlee. And I was saying to him, I was like, Brownlee had a really good rookie season. I said, he gets a little handsy sometimes. Mm-hmm. And he's going to start to get a reputation around the league of being a little too handsy. And they're going to start calling that. And he looked at me and goes, oh, yeah. He said that the problem that they had at Louisville with Brownlee was that he was too physical. Not the other way around. He was like, he's crazy in the good way. Mm-hmm. Like, but he's like, he wants up in somebody's face. And he's, and I James Foster wrote a piece for Kaharski, where he kind of broke down the film of Brownlee's rookie year. And he went back to those Justin Jefferson penalties. And I was watching them. And what James Foster really wrote was kind of along the lines of, you know, these are kind of 50-50 calls here that are being called on Brownlee. Mm. And I'm like, Brownlee has to learn that in 3 years, if he's still starting in the NFL, he probably will get 50% of the 50-50 calls.
Yeah.
But at this point, when you're matched up on Justin Jefferson, you're not going to get that call.
Nope.
And that's going to be the thing that I'm going to be fascinated to see, because Denard Wilson talked about, hey, if we commit penalties on third down, we're just going to kill ourselves. You can't put yourself in that position where it's that close.
You got to play your game, right? Because also, like, with him, like, that's the way he defends. So would you rather him have a 50-50 chance of giving up the penalty by playing his game, or increase the chance of Justin Jefferson taking it to the house by him not?
Isn't that the game within the game, though?
Exactly.
Which is like, hey, you need to learn how to do this for 2 years, and then after that, do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But you have to become a made man in the mafia before they give you that one way or another. One texter says, is Will Levis getting any first-team reps, and if so, how is he looking? Or do you think there's any shot that he's really just going up against second and third teamers and dominating?
Yeah, so there isn't necessarily first team, second team, third team right now. Brian Callahan was telling the truth when he said that. I've seen Levis start some periods. I've seen Brandon Allen start some. Seen Cam Ward start some too. So he's going against and going with what you know are the top guys. Like, he's on the field with Ridley at times. He's throwing the ball, and Brownlee is out there, and Xavier Woods is out there, and Cody Barton is. So I guess you could say, quotation mark, he's getting first-team reps. I've seen him just, you know, he's been solid. Everybody's been, you know, quarterback, well, those two have been solid.
Zach says, what are your initial impressions of Dan Moore Jr.?
I don't watch too much of the offensive line.
With no pads?
With no pads.
Yeah.
I watched him in drill work. He seems solid there, but it's too early for me to say, like, I have an impression, so to speak.
I will say this. I think you can tell terrible without the pads on, because there are two guys that stand out without the pads. I remember in 2021, I went up to Joe at practice, and this was before they put the pads on. So, like, you know how they practice for, like, a week before they put the pads on? Mm-hmm. This might have been the second or third practice. And I went to Joe, and I was like, Joe, I think Dylan Raiden sucks. And Joe was like, they haven't even put the pads on. What do you mean? They haven't even done it. And then Andre Dillard in OTAs a couple of years ago was kind of legendary with just how bad Arden Key was beating him. Mm. So if Dan Moore has not done that, at least he's passed the first test.
Yeah. He got past the first wave. I think that's good.
And then we'll see what happens when they put the pads on.
Yep.
Talking with TD is out. And again, be looking for that Father's Day story that is coming out from TD at ESPN. As always, TD, good to see you. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate it. Good to be seen.
So it's game one of the NBA Finals. And I have a basketball take that I have got to get off my chest. And we will do that coming up next. We are live from First Horizon Park, where, again, the Sounds are taking on the Gwinnett Stripers tonight at 6:35. It's Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.